Did you say Utes?
Yeah, two Utes.
What is a Ute?
Oh, excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you crying? There's no crying! There's no crying in baseball!
There's a tiny door in my office, Maxine. It's a portal, and it takes you inside John Malkovich. You see the world through John Malkovich's eyes, and then after about 15 minutes, you're spit out into a ditch on the side of the New Jersey Turnpike.
Sounds great. Who the fuck is John Malkovich?
Oh, and remember, next Friday is Hawaiian Shirt Day. So, you know, if you want to, go ahead and wear a Hawaiian shirt and jeans.
It's 38 minutes after 4 o'clock in Central Virginia. My name is Coy Barefoot, and this is Charlottesville Right Now. It's News Radio 1070 WINA. Happy, happy, happy Friday. It's a beautiful 77 degrees. We got high school football tonight, Monticello at Orange. Pregame starts at 7 on WVAX. And tonight, right here on WINA, pregame starts at 6:30 for North Stafford at Albemarle. Full coverage tonight, high school football. Tomorrow night, UVA versus Pittsburgh under the lights at Scott Stadium. It's going to be chilly before that game is over, so if you're going, you make sure you take a sweatshirt. Sunday, it's the fall running of the horses at Foxfield. So if you see a little traffic in town this weekend, there's a whole lot going on. Rick Britton joins us every Friday to talk local history, local author, historian, cartographer, and also tour guide, I guess.
Tour guide, that's right.
Yeah. Tour guide, officially.
Yeah.
So where were you yesterday?
Yesterday, I took a bunch of seniors. There were 33 of us. We went up to Oatlands Plantation, which is in Loudoun County, just a few miles south of Leesburg, right off of Route 15, and it's—I had never been before. I mean, usually I take them to places that I've already experienced, but this place was absolutely fabulous. I really encourage everybody to go. It's, you know, it's about an hour and 45 minutes, so it's a ways. You go up 29, and then you go up 15 toward Leesburg, and it's just before Leesburg on the right hand side. But I mean, the home was built in 1803, if I remember correctly. It's federal style and has some of the most beautiful Corinthian capitals on the portico that faces south that I have ever seen, ever. They're carved. They're not stone. They're carved from cedar wood, and they're absolutely...
The columns are carved out of wood?
The capitals.
Yeah.
The tops.
Oh, really?
The columns are also wood, but the capitals themselves, instead of being stone, they're carved from cedar?
I mean,
chestnut, I'm sorry. Okay. Carved from chestnut.
Well, I was
and then painted.
Say.
So they're really, really elaborate. They're really, really elaborate.
And Corinthian, of course, is the really ornate.
Is the most
capitals.
Ornate.
Yeah.
And it's just, the place is just stunning. And there's a.
And what is it?
A 4-acre. It's owned by the Historic Trust. And it's really reasonable that the tours are only, I think they're $8. To take a tour, but they also have a 4-acre formal garden that's just fantastic.
Wow.
And the grounds are just, it's absolutely stunning. It's a
wow.
beautiful place.
And who lived there? Why is it?
It was the Carter. It was built by the Carter family, the descendants of King Carter. And then in the 20th century, the Eustace family lived there. And Mr. Eustace, I think, was Teddy Roosevelt's vice president. So it's always been owned by prominent families,
okay.
Pretty much.
And Carter, remind us who Carter was. Because we have a Carter's Bridge in Albemarle County, right?
Yep.
And a Carter's Mountain.
Yep, and those are related. Carter's, Secretary's Ford is actually named after a Carter who was the secretary of the colony at the time of Virginia. But we're talking about King Carter, who owned at one time something like 7 million acres of northern Virginia.
Wow.
It was just a huge,
Goodness.
Huge property. Yeah.
Wow.
So it was a really, really prominent family from the, you know, goes all the way back to the 17th century,
yeah.
Virginia. So this was built by a descendant
in
the early 1800s.
You do these tours with folks, often with seniors from the senior center. Where's the
next
trip?
Through the senior center. The next one, we're going to Kenmore in downtown Fredericksburg.
Oh, yeah,
really
I've been
beautiful.
There.
Yeah,
it is pretty.
It's really nice. And it was built by George Washington's brother-in-law, Fielding Lewis. So Washington's sister and his brother-in-law live there. And it's really, I guess, the best known, well, it's beautiful on the outside, but it's best known for this incredible plaster work on the ceilings of two of the largest rooms there.
Cool.
That's really, really nice.
And of course, downtown Fredericksburg, while you're there.
And then after that, we're going to go and
there's a whole lot to see.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. And do a little bit of shopping.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
We're talking with Rick Britton. And what are we going to talk about today? We have a wonderful opportunity now for an expanded local history, historical conversation.
Well, this is a pretty big topic. It's one of my favorites. It's a chapter in the book that I'm still working on. I hope Andy Wolf is not listening right now, but I'm still working on it, Andy. It's TJ
and Science.
For those
who don't know, Andy is your editor and publisher, and he's anxiously awaiting your manuscript.
He's waiting this book. He keeps bugging Coy about it to bug me. It's TJ and Science, and you know, Mr. Jefferson found science a lot more interesting than he found politics. And he got involved in so many of the sciences. I mean, one of my favorite quotes of his, and I know you're familiar with this, is not a blade of grass grows uninterestingly to me. In other words, Jefferson was interested in just about everything. And when it came to science, he got involved in meteorology. Visitors to Monticello, I'm sure you've seen the wind plate that's on the roof of the east portico,
which is what again? For
it's a wind plate. It's connected via a rod to the weather vane on the roof, and by having it on the roof of the east portico there, Jefferson could take judge the wind direction from five rooms in the house without going outside. And he did that. He took note of the wind direction and all of the weather conditions every day, twice a day, his entire adult life, and that's what made Thomas Jefferson one of our first meteorologists.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a quote that we like to use up at Monticello that he predicted that Americans would become a quote-unquote a nation of weather watchers, and by the popularity of the Weather Channel, we certainly have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We check the weather. You know, we want to know. Tomorrow, we're going to go for this drive. Is it going to rain? Is it going to be nice? What's the temperature going to be like? How do we dress? We want to know all these things.
On
so
a
he was
somewhat
absolutely
related,
right.
On a somewhat related tangent, Rick, let me just take this opportunity to be one of the folks who says, you know, once upon a time, you used to be able to turn on the Weather Channel and get some weather. And those times have passed, regrettably.
The problem I have is you can't get local weather, you know?
Yeah, oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's nice to know.
And I'm on DirecTV. On DirecTV, so not only do I not get the local weather, I don't get the local channels. And when they cut away for your locals on the 8s or whatever, mine, I don't have anything. Yeah. There's nothing there. Yeah. So, yeah. There's,
and it's nice to know every now and then about London, but it's really not that important to my life day to day.
So Jefferson,
or Seattle.
He was a weatherman into that whole science of monitoring weather, tracking it.
He absolutely was. He got into astronomy. I think from the utilitarian point of view, the whole thing with meteorology was in order to enable us to grow better, vegetables, and to figure out exactly what would grow in what areas of the nation best.
Right.
So I think that's the motivation behind
that. He also
kept
a journal about his garden as well. When stuff was planted, how's it growing, how long did it take, what's the harvest look like?
Right. So that means in the next year, by reading the garden book, the garden memorandum from the previous year, he could tell approximately when certain things were going to bloom.
Right.
Yeah. It's really amazing. He got into astronomy, he got into botany. There are the great stories of the Portuguese ambassador coming down from, he and Jefferson were really close friends. That was the Abbe Correa da Serra, and he would come down from D.C., and they would spend time just wandering Monticello Mountain, you know, talking about the flowers and everything. He got into linguistics. In fact, why don't we do a quiz right now? You ready for a quiz question?
Yeah, let's
you got a
do
section?
A quiz. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, everybody knows all the different positions that Jefferson held. You know, he was VP, he was Secretary of State, he was President, Governor of Virginia. But historians argue that this presidency of this organization, which at the time was America's most prestigious science organization, that the presidency of that was actually the most important of Jefferson's achievements as far as heading an organization.
So
what was the name of this organization?
So he was the head of a certain organization.
Of a science organization.
Of a science organization.
That's right.
That most people don't know that he did this.
But it was a very, people don't know.
And a very prestigious organization.
Well, you could say honestly that in the United States at the time, it was the most prestigious science organization in the United States.
And
Jefferson
was
president of it.
And he was the grand poobah for a while.
He was. He was the Lord High Muckety Muck.
So if you think you know this organization, the name of it, the phone lines are open for you at 977-1070. I've got lunch for two, free lunch for two to Mickey Tavern. You can take it yourself or give it away as a gift. If you think you know the name of this scientific organization of which Jefferson was president for a little while.
Right. And you and I are avoiding saying the name of the city where this place was because it might give it away. And one reason people
But it was obviously one of the big cities in Colonial and
that's right.
in the Young America.
And some people might be confused about the title of this organization because one of the words we use in a different context nowadays.
Varmint.
No.
That's not it. We got no calls, so we're going to have to
get
some clues.
Oh, my gosh. That's a tough one.
We got to get some clues.
Okay. Well, it was in Philadelphia.
There you go. And Philadelphia is in the name of the organization?
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. No, it's not in the
it's
name
not?
Of the organization. No, it's not in the name
it's
of the organization.
It's not the Philadelphia Science Organization?
No, it's not. It's not. But that's kind of close.
If you think you know
Still
Lunch
don't
for
have
Two.
Any calls?
Lunch for Two at Mickey Tavern, 977-1070. I'm going to give you a commercial break to think about it.
There we go.
Jump on the Google if you'd like and check it out. We'd like the name of the organization, the scientific organization of which Jefferson was president for a while. You give us a quick call, let us know, and I'll give you a lunch for two at Mickey Tavern.
Hi, Mac McDonald for Brown Automotive. This week only, it's the Model Year End 10 event, only at Brown Dodge Chrysler. Hurry in for a huge selection and model year end savings on every vehicle in stock. Every Ram truck is marked with at least $6,000.
Out by just going to the Spectacle Shop. They have three convenient locations that serve me.
The Spectacle Shop on the downtown mall at Rio Hill Center and at the Milmont Shops.
I'm coming up, so you better get this party started. I do hope you are having a wonderful Friday afternoon. My name is Coy Barefoot, and this is Charlottesville Right Now. News Radio 1070 WINA. 77 absolutely gorgeous, delicious degrees outside right now, and I hope you have an opportunity to get out there and take a big bite of this afternoon. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful weekend. High school football tonight, college football tomorrow night, and Foxfield on Sunday. We're talking with Rick Ritten, local author and historian, and the quiz question, remind us again, because the phone lines just went crazy during that break.
Yeah. Jefferson, for a while, was president of America's most prestigious science organization. What was the title of that organization? It was headquartered in Philadelphia.
Let's go to the phone lines. Dick is on line one. Dick, do you know the answer to the organization?
I think maybe I do. Is it the American Philosophical Society?
Absolutely right. Good job.
All right. You hit that ball out of the park there, Dick. Good job. How do you know? Did you get on the Google?
No. I remembered it.
There you go.
Good for you.
I'd heard of it before. Isn't that why? Aren't the records of the Lewis and Clark expedition in Philadelphia? Because they gave them to the Philosophical Society?
I think so. And I think eventually they were published by the Philosophical Society. I think that's right.
I think so.
Yep.
In the 18th century, science was called natural philosophy.
That's right, and that's why
now that's completely lost.
And that's the word that I was referring to is people wouldn't see philosophical and think of science.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
So
that's exactly
what
I meant.
Professor of natural philosophy at UVA in the 19th century was a scientist.
Was a scientist. That's
exactly.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, Dick, hang on, and Matt's going to tell you how you can win the prizes. Matt, he is on one. And that's Lunch for Two to Mickey Tavern. Tell you how you can pick that up. And we want to thank George for calling in as well and playing. Sorry, Dick, beat you to the punch there. Congratulations. And we're talking with Rick Britton, local author and historian. The theme this afternoon is Thomas Jefferson and science.
You know, I was looking through the only book that Jefferson wrote, Notes on the State of Virginia, and we were talking about meteorology. We were talking about weather a moment ago. But listen to this quote. And so this is something Jefferson wrote in the early 1780s, just as he was finishing his governorship. Snows are less frequent and less deep. They do not often lie below the mountains more than one or two or three days, and very rarely a week. They are remembered to have been formerly frequent, deep, and of long continuous. The elderly inform me the earth used to be covered with snow about 3 months in every year. The rivers, which then seldom failed to freeze over in the course of the winter, scarcely ever do so now. Jefferson in the 1780s warning about global warming.
Yeah. That's great.
Over 200 years ago.
I love that.
Isn't that awful?
I wonder if that is a kind of thing where just the old folks always remember it being colder.
It could be.
Isn't
that funny? When you're little, yeah, it gets to you.
I remember. What was it? We were in Northern Virginia in 1978. Was it 78 or 77, that big blizzard? We had like 2 or 3 feet
that was a bad one.
Virginia. And then, of course, there was a more recent one in, 95, 96?
That's right. We had those awful ice storms.
I mean, that shut the city down.
I lived in Richmond way back, a long time ago. And I remember when I was little, we had a snowstorm one time, and the drifts were so bad, they actually sealed off, they sealed up the front door, so we couldn't get out the front door of the house.
Oh, man, that's scary.
That's pretty bad. But it was a drift. It was a drift. You know, yeah, eat the cats and the dogs, all the plants in the house.
Goodness.
What I was interested in talking about, you know, we talked a little bit about meteorology, are two of his, I think, his most important scientific areas, his genres where he made real significant contributions. And this past weekend, I was fortunate enough to hear Professor Hantman, who is a professor of archaeology at the University of Virginia, talk about Jefferson and archaeology. And one of the amazing things is that Jefferson is considered to be the father of modern archaeology. And it began right here in Albemarle County in 1783. The Monacan Nation and their contributor tribes, they had a large village here in Albemarle County, which is not that too far away from where we are right now, about 5 or 6 miles. It was Manasukapana. I always said Manasukapanao, but he said it was Manasukapana, and he knows a lot more about it than I do. But they left a large burial mound there, and so Jefferson took some of his slaves over there in 1783 and excavated this burial mound. The thing was about 40 feet around and 12, 14 feet high. And
eventually, huge.
It was really huge. Now, he says that it had actually been cut down by the plow. So, and probably also by some flooding in the floodplain. It was right alongside the Rivanna River.
And for folks who don't know, this, if you're headed up 29 North and you pass Walmart and Brown's and Sam's Club and you go over the bridge there over the Rivanna River, if you look off to the right, down the river, Manasukapana, which is the main village of the Monacan people who lived here before the English, was down there along that river. A big village of thousands of people lived there at one point.
Right, right. And actually, I'm looking through his quotes in Notes on the State of Virginia. He says that it had been 12 or 14 feet high. When he got to it, it was still only 7. At that time, it was only 7 feet high. So it had been cut down in half. Trees were growing on it. And what they did was they cut a trench through the center of it so that Jefferson could walk through and look on either side. Now, you know, we have to talk about this, and Professor Hantman talked about this, that, you know, nowadays, ethically, you know, we're talking about digging into an area that was revered by Native Americans, a place where Jefferson talks about they came 30 years earlier. So in the 1750s, a party of them came, of Native Americans came, and performed ceremonies around this. So we'd have to think about this ethically nowadays if we do it the same way. But they cut a trench through it so that Jefferson could walk through it and examine the layers on either side. And he estimated that up to 1,000 bodies had been laid to rest over the course of time.
So it was a big burial mound.
In many layers, yeah.
Wow.
But a layer at a time. So it had been built up over many, many years. And in that one excavation, and because in typical Jefferson fashion, he wrote about it in a very detailed manner and went about it very carefully for his time, you know, he became the father of modern archaeology, and in that same dig, invented stratigraphy, the study of the different layers of soil and what they contained.
And there's people that don't know that he is the father of American archaeology.
Right.
Very, very cool.
Modern archaeology.
And Jeff Hantman, archaeologist at the UVA, another aside here.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy that introduced me to my wife.
Oh, wow.
There you go. He said, you need to call Allison Bell.
Hey, that's great.
Yeah, let's take a break here for CBS News at the top of the hour, and we'll continue our discussion with Rick Britton on the other side. This is Charlottesville right now.
If everything was free, I'd go to work for